All right, here we are again for another episode of The Single, Obsolete, and Dangerous. I just want to take a moment to really express my appreciation and the love that I have for you, good brother. You are definitely someone who has been like very integral in my life. You know, you came to me and I came across you in my life where you are one of the most valuable lessons. I was arrogant and I thought I understood what it meant to be a stand-up guy and to be loyal,
right?
And I was good with that when it came to my immediate interactions, like my brother, my father, my mother, you know, but meeting you at the time that I did, you taught me how to extend past that immediate family thing,
That's right.
And you showed me how to be a brother and that doesn't need to be blood, but to have honor and integrity in your brotherhood. And I'm still learning from that today. So
right.
I just wanted to take the moment out to just say thank you.
Oh, I appreciate
and
that.
And appreciate you just coming and doing this session with me.
Oh, you know, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I just, today we have Sean McCaskill, who is a teacher, a mentor, motivational speaker, a business owner, and a stand-up man in the community. So
I appreciate that.
Thank you for coming on here.
Oh, man, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Definitely.
So can you, please, before you start, anything that you got going on, my platform is your platform, just to show what you got going on, where they can reach you at, anything else, business stuff going, what's going
on?
Yeah,
so right now I've been really concentrating on the motivational speaking, and I've been doing some educational consulting where I'm going into high-risk schools and working with teachers who have a difficult time and working with administrators and teachers who have a difficult time of managing the students' behavior. I'll go in and do an observation of a teacher, meet with them afterwards and give them some techniques in which they can do to manage the behavior of the students. What some of the results are is, you know, it's a reduction in out of classroom referrals, suspensions, and also on the back end of it, it gives the teacher more time to teach instead of dealing with behaviors. And then ultimately, what does that do? That improves the standardized test scores and things like that. So that's been working for me, but I'm really trying to push this motivational stuff and the consulting piece, you know, so the two.
Right. Oh, man. You're right on. That's right up your alley. Then you're ready to go, man.
Yep.
I remember one of the, man, I have so many stories with you, but I remember one time we were up, subsequently a fraternity brother of mine, and so we were at a fraternity party up at a school, and there were some older gentlemen from another fraternity, and so because your presence was there, right, everyone, I could tell you being there made, like, we were all cool.
Right.
So we were just really cool and calm, and then I think, and you were just being like, you know, trying to interact and talk, and one of their older brothers just got extremely belligerent, right? And it was so powerful. You said, okay, well then let's go outside right now. And at that point in time, a couple of us looked at it, wait, did Brother Sean just say, we're being cool because he's here, but there was something that in the interaction that you had with him.
Right.
And all you said was, okay then, let's go outside then. So we were just like, and the way we all tried to galvanize, but man, you wasn't hype, you were just calm, you were cool. And when we started walking outside, he paused and stopped.
Right.
And then like, cause their crew started getting extra tight and everything. But then once he had realized, and I just, my eyes were on you the whole entire time. You did not shake, you did not, your eyes wasn't fluttering. I couldn't even tell if you were breathing heavy or nothing. And that was just so powerful to me because it wasn't that you were being like nonviolent or anything. You were being calm and cool and you were showing respect and restraint. But then when it got extremely belligerent and when it came to, you know, he started suggesting real, like really threatening things. You're like, okay, well, you know what? Communicating and talking, this is not working.
That's
fine.
Right.
Then let's do it right now.
That's
let's
right.
go outside. Let's go. And that was just so powerful to me, bro. That was that. That was just one of those. Was just one of those like, yo, I appreciated it because up until that point in time, we started giving each other the look like, okay, he's not tripping, we're not tripping. Okay, everyone's cool. Okay, we're cool. All right.
That's
Brother
right.
Sean is here, but okay, everything's cool. But as soon as you flipped it, we were just like, well, wait a minute, we gotta go with him. But yo, I wasn't even ready for that, and it was just. That was just powerful, bro. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I definitely do.
Yeah.
I definitely do. Well, I mean, it. You know, I think a lot of times we've gotten to a part in our society where people don't understand their strengths and their weaknesses. We just give people the title of leaders. And then sometimes those leaders, well, those people that we're following, they're not true leaders.
Wow.
And then what starts happening, it creates more problems than what it truly is. You know what I mean? Everybody's not meant to be a leader. You know what I mean? But when you come across a person who's a leader, it's easy to galvanize and it's easy to follow behind them because it's just a natural progression. And you can understand how to play your position. A lot of times you have people in positions that they're supposed to be leaders.
Yeah.
But they don't have influence over the people that they're leading. So it creates more chaos than anything else. So you just kind of pick and choose and kind of know, you know, your spot and what you, and it's an honor.
And even give more context, we were actually playing chess early before that. The comp, I'm playing chess and we're actually in the lobby playing chess and we're just all, and then that situation had happened and he was just playing and I'm looking at it like, wow, yo, like that's how he even plays chess. Like it was just even like, and it's funny, I've never really got a chance to sit down and talk with you about it, but when I was coming here for, you know, for this interaction, I was like, yo, I want to talk to you about that. And like, in your mind, did you know that we, I knew you could tell we were all watching you. And it was like, like 60, 70 of us. Like, so we were literally all watching you to see that. Did you knew that, like, man, if this goes, I could tell, like, you were giving that restraint because you know how it could escalate.
Right.
But then there was a point to where it's like, okay, that, it needs to escalate,
right?
And I think that is the wisdom. And there's, I mean, maybe you and one other person I've met in my life, and I've traveled half around the world that I could, that saw the moment to where it was. It wasn't so much it wasn't so much a Martin Luther King, but it was able to. You did the Martin Luther King and Malcolm X beautifully.
Right.
Some people it's hard for them to be go from MLK to Malcolm X, so they're just straight MLK or they're straight Malcolm X.
That's right.
But you were able to. Non-violent, but when it came time to really do it, let's do it. And you were like, okay. Because I'm a proponent, man, always walk away. Don't get physical, don't get in confrontations. But also my mind, from strategy, man, sometimes that is call for and you have to step up. And you did that, but then when you did it, it just, it killed.
That's right.
It killed it entirely.
That's right, because a lot of times what happens is that when you know it, the way I was brought up, we can get into a physical confrontation, and after I'm done with it, we can sit down and have a conversation, and I'm done with it. It's just, you know, when you recognize that, hey, listen, we can have, we can, you know, we can sit down and really have a conversation like gentlemen, and, you know, try to work this thing out, you know. But if you want to get into some more medieval type stuff, we can get in, we can get with that too. So, you know, we don't let, you know, our organizations, or don't let, because we're the intellects and the leaders around campus, don't let that fool you that, you know, if it comes down to it, we're going to protect ourselves. You know what I mean? We're going to do what we need to do to protect ourselves, protect our house. You know what I mean? It's, you know, for me, you know, if I need to push to go where I need to go, then I shouldn't be in that situation. I don't need to push. Once I say, you know, okay, well,
let's go.
Let's go. It's time to go. You know what I mean? And what I'm doing, I'm preparing you to let you know that I'm for real. Let's go.
Yeah, and you didn't raise your voice. You didn't get mad. You didn't get hyped. You didn't. He was getting amped up. He was getting even extra more hype. And then even when you were trying to like, okay, we're like, I understand. And then he just, I think he had said something about, man, don't make me just go outside and grab the, something like that. And you, your confidence had changed, but your tone and everything. Okay, then. Then we'll go outside. But, you know, and that was deep.
His conversation, him getting escalating, that is a sign of weakness. That's a sign of weakness on his part. You know, him keep talking, you let me know what you're trying to do. So let's cut that out. I'm tired of you telling me what you want to do. Let's go ahead and see what you got. So you can go ahead and go muscle up your guys. Let's see what you got. Because I already know, you know what I mean? You already done told me. You done talked your way into this, so. Now I'm gonna give you an opportunity. Let's go outside. So that journey from working where we were at to go outside,
to the door,
that gives him some time to think about what he wants to do.
And he did, and he stopped, and he just walked in and it was just, we wind up, all of us, we wind up outside of the lobby, outside on the other side with the doors, and he, they never came, they never followed.
So that gave him time. I think a lot of times, you know, people are very reactionary. Sometimes they react to it. You know what I mean? But if you give people time to really think about what they're getting ready to do, they'll normally make the right decision. So you just give them a little time, you know what I mean? So that walk, after all the conversation, I'm not going to talk to you no more. Let's go ahead outside. So from that walk, from that destination to that journey, where it was going to come, because it was going to come. He was, you know what I mean? Whatever he was looking for, he was definitely going to get it. He was going to be the first one to get what he was looking for.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So if he had influence over the other ones, he was going to get, he was going to get that.
And I'm asking this because the SOD, the Single Obsolete and Dangerous Podcast, it's a podcast where black folks and white people can come together and talk about white people, white supremacy, racism, but in a constructive manner. Speak about the things that we're thinking about, but don't know how to articulate.
Right.
And one of the key things as it relates to us interacting and dealing with racism, because the next, I wanted to kind of dive into that situation, is it reflective of how we respond as black men in experiencing of this racism thing? Because we're so quick to be physical. We're so quick to, and because of the experiences and the history that has happened where we perceive, based upon how we're looking at history, that they were passive in the back in the time, you know? And so now, one of the key things I'm looking at and seeing is that being confrontational, being physical as a black male, right? You have to be extremely skillful and you have to have a lot of wisdom about it. And that situation had showed that, you know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't so much being nonviolent, because I'm not a nonviolent person, but I do understand about restraint and have wisdom and having some people like you in my life and actually having experiences like, okay, this is how I can actually tangibly see why it broke down the way it broke down. And if I need to be physical, whether I need to be physical with someone that looks like me or some physical with somebody who does not look like me. And I think that was like a big piece that I wanted to kind of bring in the beginning part of this conversation.
I think a lot of it is the threat that it can get that way. See, if we even go back to the situation, he would have kept having a conversation, he could have kept getting escalating until he knew that it can get to that point. See, it's not always that you have to do it. They just have to know that it can get to that point. What you're looking for, you can get. You know, you understand. So when we start looking at, first and foremost, if we start talking about racism, as black folks, we really got to have a real honest conversation internally, because we've been conditioned to look externally for solutions that can only be solved internally. When you're starting to talk about $1.1 trillion that black folks spend in a year, right? $1.1 trillion, and the black dollar stays in the black community less than 6 hours. Is that the white man's fault that we're not spending money in our own communities, or is that a black fault? Is that the white man's fault that we're not investing in the political system, or is that black folks' fault? You know what I mean? So again, we've been conditioned, and when you're conditioned, it creates more distractions. So we've been distracted on how to play the game.
Wow.
The game is played in a way where in this society, in America, you want to play. So a lot of people come with, oh, the white man, I ain't got time for that. I already know. See, if you focus on racism, that's a distraction. You already lost.
Okay.
They already got you. I already got you. As soon as you start focusing on racism, I got you. You're no good.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Now, if we start to look at competing in this, in our society, first economically, you got to control that $1.1 trillion. You have to. Then you have to become, participate politically, not just by going out and vote, but going out and then contributing, financially contributing to political campaigns.
True.
And then you have to get the right people to run for those type of political positions, right? And then the last one, three, is entrepreneurship. You gotta create your own jobs. You can't keep going to, you know, I mean, just think about it. You have an idea. You sacrifice your life savings, you know, to start a business. And then it's mandated that you have to hire, you know, 40% of your staff has to be white. You know what I mean? You created this. You should be able to control who works for you, who doesn't work for you. But what happens is it creates distractions. So now the system tells us, hey, you know, and then let me go back. And as you start to focus on this racism, if you want to compete, that's how you have to compete. But you have to look at it. And if you really look at the numbers, 85% of the wealth, 85% of the wealth in this country is controlled by the top 20%. Mm. So if you look at that, 85% of the wealth is controlled by the top 20%.
Okay.
So that leaves 15% of the wealth that 80% of the people are fighting for that amount, that wealth.
Right.
What are you creating? You're creating an environment of chaos. Because the 80%, if 85% is controlled by 20% of the wealth, they're controlling it, 80% of the people are fighting for 15% of the wealth. Mm. So the question is, as white folks, white folks need to kind of understand this, you just like me. You and this 50, you fighting for this 15% just like everybody else. Mm. So now, and to keep the white folks distracted, they'll tell the white folks it's the black folks' fault that, you know what I mean, that, you know, you ain't in this, you ain't getting money because it's the black folks taking the jobs. Or it's the Hispanics taking the job. It's them, we gotta build the wall. So we create fear so that people don't stay on message and understand what's really going on. You gotta be able to participate in this economy. And the only way you're gonna participate in is economically, politically, and entrepreneurship. Mm.
I like, that's what we need. Or that's what I needed for this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're gonna go to the SOD. Ready?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Are you white or non-white?
Am I white or non-white?
Yes.
I would say I'm non-white.
Okay. And is the system of white supremacy, which is racism, is it in existence?
I think you use certain things as mechanisms to keep people in fear. But if you're black and you're part of that 20%, it don't matter. If you got the color green, if you have an idea, if you had the right color green, you could participate in this society. If you had the right color, which is green, if you have money and you can compete, or if you have a political position, which you can compete, you are part of this system. And is there racism that exists? Yes, because it's racism that oppresses the 80% of people to keep them, you know, distracted from what's really going on.
So are you saying that racism doesn't exist for someone who is not white when they reach that kind of they get to that 20% area?
You're always looked at as a black man regardless, or a black woman, black man, a Hispanic man. But again, the way that you're able to maneuver with inside our society is totally different.
Hmm.
You can say what you want. I mean, Oprah Winfrey, she can maneuver in a way that, you know, even white people can't even maneuver. She can have a sit down with a president. I don't care if it's Trump or if it was President Obama. She gonna get a conversation based upon her status in this society. She's gonna get that conversation. You can best believe that.
True indeed. So it does exist, but not for everyone.
Not for everyone, because again, I think racism is used as a distraction to keep people fighting against one another. It's fear.
Okay.
And my acronym for fear is false evidence appearing real. You think that it's real, you know what I mean? But you could take a white person, put them in the slums and put them in a ghetto, they gonna have the same characteristics as a black folk that you put in that same environment.
Yeah.
There's no difference, it's survival. You know what I mean? Herbert Spencer talked about it, you know, and sociologist Herbert Spencer talked about it, survival of the fittest. Okay. You know what I mean? And then Herbert Spencer basically, what Herbert Spencer said was it's just the strong survive, the weak will perish. And then he even went as far as to say, you're wrong for helping out the weak.
Mm. You know, when you talk about survival of the fittest, that stems from Darwinism.
Yes, and Herbert Spencer started to build on that.
Okay. And Charles Darwin, was he white or non-white?
I think he was non-white.
Charles Darwin was from England.
I understand that, but when you start to speak that language, when you're educating people, right, about the system and how to beat the system, you become non-white. So when you start to speak, you're speaking non-white because of the vast majority of people who are in control are white.
So let me stick with the sociologist. The sociologist, you guys, is he white or non-white?
He's white.
Okay. So the sociologist that is using survival of the fittest and building on survival of the fittest,
that's right,
is a white man who got the survival of the fittest that was developed by another classified white man during the time of racial classification. to create the idea and understanding that racism is something that is a natural propensity of nature. Meaning, when we look outside and we see the situation that black folks are in, it is a natural progression that this was an inevitable to happen. And I, from what I've seen, is when we see racism and see it as a survival of the fittest, or as this is just what's going to happen, then what happens is us dealing with it or eliminating it, right, finds itself in the ethers. You're not really able to tend. How can you really put your hands on something that was supposed to naturally happen?
But why would I eliminate it when I need it for this type of society? For a capitalist society, you need that fear, that touch of fear inside of the system. In other systems, you may not have that.
Which one? Which system would you be referring to?
Again, I've never lived in another system.
But
so
we know about
again,
ones.
I mean,
so let's try make communism maybe, or socialism.
Communism is basically a different type of system where you just know that I'm not going to be able to move from here to there. I'm never going to go from the gutter to making millions. In a capitalist society, a person like Jay-Z can come from the gutter and then be sitting down with the president of the United States and have a conversation.
You're absolutely right. But because within a capitalist system, which I would garner as James Allen and The Wealth of Nations, the book that he wrote, kind of codified the understanding about the free market system. What it meant, right? Mm-hmm. James Allen is another white man during the time of racial classification. What I'm trying to show is that the ideas and any idea that comes from the mind of a white person never was ever going to facilitate the truth, justice, and harmony to anyone who's not white. Even in communism, Karl Marx from Russia, right? That's another way. Socialism, all of these things are ideas that are presented by Europeans for the sole purpose to maintain their thought of what superiority is. I understand that we're in a condition that we have to operate and play this game that they're playing, but I also understand that from the onset, the practices of how we're playing this game is to be defeated. And some of those pieces is to think that this is naturally here. A lot of people think that we really are here because we put ourselves here. Like, we're the ones, when you talk about slavery, man, we're the ones that sold ourselves. The African king sold it to the white people. If we never sold it to the white people, man, we would never be in slavery, right? And so what's happening is we're taking on, and you're right, there is something about self-development and about self reliance.
Right.
But if we're in the condition of a game, how much self-reliance must you have if you're in jail? So if we're in a prison, right, and the context and the condition that we're in is in a jail, man, am I to blame the prisoner for the condition of how the jail runs? The jail was already set up before he got in there.
Right.
The condition, now,
that creates leadership, though. But again, I think that it's only going to take a leader to be able to change that. And it goes back to our start of our conversation. When you start talking about leadership, if you go back and look at America, and the most change that happened for black folks during the civil rights movement. But during the civil rights period, you had identified leaders that were leading the movements. But then if you notice, you know, the system, you will say white supremacy, I'll say the system, because the system is going to say, you know, because I'm a systems thinker. Everything happens.
Absolutely.
You know, there's reasons why things happen. It's a system. There's a breakdown in the system. Right. So the system basically came up and said, hey, wait a second. They were making some powerful moves, and they start to galvanize people to come together collectively to move in a direction. Let's kill off the leaders and see what happens. So then they kill off Martin, they kill off Malcolm. You know what I mean? They disband and they kill off some of the people in the Black Panther Party, right? So now black folks are scurrying around like, well, where do we go? But then in addition to that, what the system did when it did that, the system said, guess what? It gave everybody else who was even thinking about taking the mantle of leadership to say, guess what? That could be you. So then those leaders are like, you know what? No, I'm not about that life.
Was there ever a point in time in history where we were operating in the same civil rights where there were no leaders? As it relates to black folk in America.
No, I can't say that there were.
Okay. Because the reason why I'm going to say that, because leadership is just natural. It's a natural progression in society. So what happens, a lot of people who are leaders, they are afraid to take those leadership positions. And when I say leaders, what is a leader to me is the ability to influence. If you can't influence, you're not a leader. Okay. So you can be the smartest guy in the community, and you can run for a position and win that position because, you know, by default,
right,
that doesn't make you a leader.
Okay.
So a lot of times you have people in leadership positions who are truly not leaders, but they're supposed to be leading a movement that they can't move. They can't move the movement because they're not leaders.
You know what? This is so poignant that you're saying this, because there was a lesson that you taught me when you said there was a situation that was happening and you pulled me to the side. And I guess you saw what was going on among our group, and you pulled me to the side and you said, Austin, you do not need a position to be a leader.
No.
You can still do what you need to do. You don't have to fight to become the president.
That's right.
So there was a point in time when we were free from slavery that we did experience civil rights. When we were, and it's known as the Reconstruction.
Okay.
During that time we came off the plantation, to this date, we had more senators, more congressmen, more local public elected officials ever in the history of us being in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Between 1866 to 1890, which is known as Reconstruction, we had amassed political power positioning as a reflective of civil rights than we have ever seen. We don't really have, or we don't really look at, there was no one that was very specific that stood out as a leader during those times.
So
what I'm saying is,
times you're naming, look at look at the time period that you're naming.
100 years later.
Okay, but it wasn't sustainable.
And this is what the sustaining, the ability to sustain that, right? And whatever may happen, and introduction of white society, how they practice. By the time we veer ahead 100 years later in the 1960s, this wasn't anything new to the white power structure. They had seen what we did when we galvanized when we came off the plantation, and then the introduction of Jim Crow and certain slave laws and slave clothes created a situation of slavery as well. And us coming out of it, they imparted something that they didn't impart when we came off the plantation. In civil rights, what you said, they imparted certain things that now the galvanizing is so diluted and convoluted. Because in the civil rights, guess who needs to also run with you guys? These women, these gays, these immigrants.
That's right.
When we were doing the Reconstruction after slavery, it was solely based upon us, for us, by us, because we were the only ones that were in chattel slavery.
For us, by us can only be accomplished when you can control that $1.1 trillion that you're spending in this society.
I don't know
For us, by us. If that's $1.1 trillion, that's a lot of buying power. That's power within a capitalist society.
But this is the thing. If we were to really create some economic improvement, our ability to have that 1.1 trillion will stop. If you look at it, majority of us don't own anything. So all that buying power comes from us being employees.
Right.
And so again, we only have that buying power based upon us being employed by the white power structure.
Yeah, but
I'm suggesting that buying power will cease to exist if we start to try to implement some of this economic freedom that you're talking about, this buying, because you're absolutely right. We need to tap into that 1.1 trillion buying, but that we only have that based upon the condition that created us a situation to where that the money really come from white people for paying us for working.
Okay, but yeah. But again, everybody's not going to be able to go and create their own job. That's not everybody's personality.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So there's always going to be workers. There's always going to be workers. Now, what I'm suggesting is that now you can go work for someone who looks like you. You know what I mean? So again, when we're really starting to, when you start to beat it down, let's look at it, for example, let's look at sports.
Okay.
And one of the biggest things that happened to me, and this is why I do respect LeBron James a lot, you know what I mean? Because of the way that he thinks. At such an early age, he thought this way. You know what I mean? I was watching a video, my son, my oldest boy, he loves videos. So he came across this video and we watched it with LeBron James. LeBron James basically came across, he said,
when he was 19, he graduated when he was 19, he said him and his best friend, another 19-year-old, was sitting in a meeting with, I think it was with Reebok. And Reebok, he said this was the largest table, business table we ever sat on ever. So he said the guy from Reebok slid him across the check for $30 million. He said, sign with us right now. That check is yours. You can go put it in your bank account, cash it, sign with us. So understanding the mindset of a kid from Akron, from the ghetto, who's never really had anything, $30 million slid across the table to you. $30 million. I'm thinking back when I was 19, coming from the Hill District in Pittsburgh, I'm taking that $30 million, we out.
I'm taking that $30 million right now.
He was smart enough to slide the $30 million back across the table.
He slid it back.
He slid it back.
Wow.
He said, no, what I'll do is I'm going to circle back. I'm going to go see what everybody else has to offer, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay.
So, again, understanding how, you know, understanding his economic power at such an early age. Now look at him. He's opening up schools. You know what I mean? He understood that his buy. I mean, he's a brand himself. So if you look at it, we're so conditioned, like this whole thing with the NFL.
True indeed.
They want to boycott the NFL. If you want to boycott the NFL, let's look at the, look, if you really want to boycott something, boycott the fact that there's no, there's really not that many minority owners. Why don't we have more black owners? You know what I mean? Instead of just saying, I'm going to boycott the NFL. You know what I mean? If you and me, I'm going to boycott this. Boycott. Why ain't we questioning why aren't there more minority owners? So now if I'm a minority owner, I can hire and fire who I want on my team. So if I'm a, if I'm in a business and I know that if I hire this person is going to be a distraction. This person is going to take money away from me. This person is going to make, you know, sponsors walk away from my team. Why would I bring that person on my team? I'm not going to do that. It's just not good business sense.
Okay.
The real issue is let's get more minority owners and own their teams instead of being the ones that's out there doing the work. Now we can hire people. So that brings me back to my point. When we start to talk about that 1.1 trillion, we have to understand our own buying power. You need me for something. We create fashion. We tell the society what's hot, what's not.
Right.
You know what I mean? So now if that's the case, then why won't I do it in this way and use that internally to help move the mission of black folks. We got to stop focusing so much on the racism and start healing inside. If we heal inside, now we can go out and fight outside.
Okay.
Let's fight out. If I'm a fight, let's fight internally inside first.
Okay.
I got some control over this. I can do this. I can do that. Now, all that, this racism, man, that's a distraction. We're focusing on that, and that keeps the mission away from where it needs to be at. When I keep trying to tell people $1.1 trillion, what are we doing? Why don't we build up our own communities? Gentrification is happening all across inner cities in this country.
Okay.
You mean to tell me that there was not any black folks that could have caught hold and start buying this stuff? Magic Johnson is letting you know that it can work. If you build it, they will come. He put businesses inside the inner cities and they're flourishing. They're doing well.
Right.
He's taking that capital instead of you using it outside your community, you keep it inside your community. You don't have to go outside your community to go and get these things. So it's no longer, and you can't keep asking somebody else to fix it when they're profiting from it. So why am I going to fix something I'm making money off of?
Okay.
So why am I going to fix this community when I'm making money off of it? Okay. There's more money in the problem than there is in the solution. I can make more money with the problem.
Okay. Yeah, you said a lot. All right. I want to stick with this buying power.
Okay.
For the next question. Do you have anything in your possession or that you've accomplished in your life that was not given to you or allowed for you to have by a white person and or white people directly or indirectly? I'll ask it again. Do you have anything in your possession or that you've accomplished that was not given to you or allowed for you to have by a white person and or white people directly or indirectly?
Well, I mean, if we're going to be honest with that,
I want you to be honest.
I really can't say that I've had some, because again, there was an opportunity that was given to me When I wanted to start playing football, my football coach, who was a white man, he helped me out.
There
he
we
got
go.
Me.
There we go.
I, you know, I started playing football.
Yeah.
Then there was another white man who was recruiting me, who gave me the opportunity to play ball.
There we go.
But he understood but it was a win-win for him because he was recruiting me and I was giving something back for him. So, no, but then we can also say too that
accomplished or in possession.
Or
a physical possession, something that's tangible that you can grab on, or something that you've accomplished.
Well, but again, non-directly,
indirectly, yes.
Indirectly
is what
is the catch. You know what I mean? So I caught that. So I'm trying to think. So
Once you peel, and you know, once you peel that first layer out, it's gonna be a white person and white people right there.
Somewhere down the line. Yeah, somewhere down the line. But I think also. But it's different now with my sons. You know what I mean? Because now, like the things that I'm doing for them, it's coming directly from, now their experiences may be different if they're asked that question when they get older, because I'm around and I'm showing them different things and I'm trying to get them to live a life with a free thinking mind and not getting wrapped up in the fear and being afraid to, you know, test the system and beat the system out of his own game.
To the question, that is very poignant, and I'm glad. You know, sometimes when I ask people that question on the podcast, and they're non-white, they have a hard time with that question. They don't have a hard time answering it; they have the hard time accepting the answer that they came to. You know, and I appreciate that when you did it and you ran it, and you were like, "Yo, that indirect thing." You know what? I'm sorry, I can't say that. You know what I mean? But that is a sign of maturity and not falling into the fear piece.
You can't be afraid. But again, this is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
In this society, because we're the minorities in the society as far as like numbers, not just by, you know, I mean, by sheer numbers, I think we represent like 13% of the population.
45 million.
But okay, so again, and we don't control a lot.
No.
You know what I mean? So you're going to have that indirect influence by... a non-black person.
Yeah.
You're going to have that, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. See, because we've been thinking, you know, I mean, for example, and because I'm an athlete, I love using sports analogies.
Please do.
If LeBron James, or you take the number one player in basketball.
Right.
Coming out of high school, says, guess what? I'm going to Hampton University. I guarantee you, you're going to see Hampton University playing on ESPN primetime because he sells. It comes down to what sells, what makes money. It doesn't matter the university, it who sells, that individual sells. And it's funny that we're here on Pitt's campus, and I was, if you go right across Fitzgerald Fieldhouse,
right.
LeBron James played over at Fitzgerald Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
He played over Fitzgerald. It was packed, and it was on 8 o'clock on ESPN, prime time.
When he was still
He was still in high school.
He was still in high school, right.
It was prime time, and it was sold out, and it was on ESPN. It was on ESPN, it was sold out. So if you're telling me, if you take your black athletes and those black athletes say, you know what, I'm going to a HBCU. Now, those corporations, the same ones that's giving Duke, Kentucky, and all these other universities money, they're going to start giving HBCUs money because that's what sells.
And because of the current status of HBCU money as it relates to finances and things of that nature, that would help.
Yes.
And that would help.
So again... instead of looking externally and blaming other people for the situation that we're in, when you look internally and then you start educating people to be able to take a risk and bet on their own people and start going to HBCUs. That doesn't mean that all blacks have to go to HBCUs, but what I'm saying to you, if enough would influence, would go to
that would go.
Oh, you can best believe it, and they can produce. If they can produce, oh, you can best believe you. Lamar Jackson just got drafted by the Baltimore, by the Baltimore Ravens, and he went to Louisville. If he would have went to a HBCU, Mm-hmm. They're coming on ESPN. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that. They're going to be on ESPN.
Yeah.
And if you start talking about that, and that's the questions as Black folks that we really need to start having those pointed conversations like that.
Yeah.
It's easy to talk about what someone else is doing and blaming. It's called a culture of blame.
Okay.
I'm gonna blame everybody else for my situation instead of taking ownership over it.
You know, I'm a proponent of taking ownership of your own actions, but I do know that what created the condition for my actions to be presented definitely was not me. Definitely was not anyone that looked like me or looked like my father, for sure.
Absolutely, I can agree with that.
So because of that, because I think, again, this is where that indirect part comes, but when we start peeling back like that surface layer, right? Mm-hmm. So say if that top number one high school athlete goes to Hampton University, the bank that Hampton University holds its charter with is a white owned corporate bank. The land that Hampton University is on, the name Hampton is named after a white general. So the structures that we're in on the surface level, we can buy businesses, we can start doing some economic development, things of that nature, but deep down, once we get past one or two layers, there's gonna be a white person and a white people who benefit from that.
Yeah, but that's fine, but then just
that's
say,
fine?
But no, because what you're saying also, there are black banks out there that we can start taking our money and putting our money into those black banks.
True.
There are black credit unions that exist. As a matter of fact, one of the longest standing ones is on the Hill District, the Hill District Credit Union.
Yeah.
So again, our resources, it's just that we have to create those resources and we have to put that money in there.
Yeah.
Because again, your money, if you're making your money, now, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to be educated with it? Are you going to put it in black-owned? You know what I mean? Or am I going to start looking at some black-owned stuff? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's enough money for white people to still make money off their banks. They're going to make their money. Mm. You know what I'm saying? But again, can we just start to think like, you know what? I'm going to put my money there. So now, the more money I invest in this black bank, now they can start to reinvest that money and make more money for themselves. And then as this starts to grow, you know, look, then somebody else can create something. Someone else can create something. Everybody can eat when it comes to capitalism. Everybody can eat.
Hmm. But there are a particular group, because of capitalism to work, they must not. They can't eat. Matter of fact, they have to starve. Capitalism and free market work, there has to be an underbelly of society.
Absolutely.
So everyone can eat, but there is going to be a particular group of people who are going to not only not eat, they're going to have to starve.
But again, that's part of the system and making the system work. That's why education can't be free.
Hmm.
Everybody can't get education. Just like when the system, as we start to go into an information-based economy, when jobs start to shrink, and now I don't have a bunch of jobs to go around, now guess what I got to do? I got to make it more difficult for people to navigate through the educational system so that I don't have a whole bunch of people coming out and killing the market. Mm. That's why a bachelor's degree now, you set up a bachelor's degree right now and you're trying to go get a job, it doesn't have as much value as it used to have. So now you're looking at a master's degree. And if you really want to set yourself apart, you got to start looking at the doctorate degree, because again, the system is going to create itself in a way and it's going to protect itself to figure out how do I continue to make this money. And the only way I can continue to make this money is that I need to place some fear inside the system to keep people distracted on something else while we're still grooving, moving, and shaking over on this end.
And who created this system? White or non-white people?
Non-white people.
So non-
I mean, no. I'm sorry. White people create the system.
Okay.
But now, this is what I'll say.
Okay.
I've been to Africa.
Right.
Which was a blessing. You know what I mean? To be able to touch the continent, man.
Absolutely.
It was life changing. But then also I understand too, America's a great country to live in if you understand the game and you're willing to beat it at its own game.
Mm.
It's a great country because now you can build generational wealth.
Mm.
You can build generational wealth where your family is outside of that 15%.
When you say family, are you saying at least about 350,000 to 500,000 people?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you, like I say, like, with athletes, when they sign these huge contracts.
Their family's life's changed.
Yeah, their family. That whole, like, the way I grew up, growing up in the Hill District,
yeah.
You know, and not my son, they totally don't think the way that I think. It's totally different. You know what I mean? It's totally different. They don't see the world the way that I've seen it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I come from the gutter. I've seen some things where it's like, wow, I've seen poverty. I've seen drugs. Mm. I've seen killings. I've seen those things. And those are not badge of honors to say, look at me, look at me. But I understand. So now I wanted to position my sons where they can see the system for what it is. If I can just understand the system, I can beat the system. You know what I mean? Instead of having to struggle of being, you know, I have to trial and error, make some mistakes. So bump your head, bump your head. I'm trying to make sure they don't have to bump their head as many times as I did so that they can beat the system for what it is.
Hmm. Next question. We'll come back to this father piece in the next segment, but next question. Do you have any white friends or white allies?
Absolutely. I definitely do.
I appreciate you having me. I definitely do.
There was a professor when I was in college.
Undergrad, graduate?
Graduate school.
Okay.
And I don't know why, you know, he took a liking to me, you know. He seen some potential in me that I really didn't see in myself at that particular time. So I was in graduate school, and at the time I didn't have like a laptop, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Grad school without a laptop?
I didn't have my own laptop. And then in addition to that, you know, I was still coming from the, you know, mindset, you know, I was having people type my papers for me. I would handwrite it and have somebody type the papers.
Oh, right.
So we would meet, so I'm sitting down with him, and we started talking. I was like, you know, he was like, hey, Sean, now let me ask you a question, Sean. And I've always been open and honest. True. You know, so he's like, when you're doing your papers, how are you doing your papers? So I told him how I'm going about it. He's like, man, you're not gonna survive doing it that way. So he said, here, take this and turn it in at the end of the semester. At the end of the year. So he gave me a laptop, one of his own laptops. And you know, I mean, he would just look out for me. You know what I mean? When I was having some difficulty with one of my professors who was upset because I wouldn't commit to being a particular, like a sociology of your functionalist symbolic interactions or conflict theorists.
I was eclectic.
You know, eclectic, I think that certain social phenomenons or answers.
Call for certain positions. Yeah. I'm like, I can't be locked down to one. I need to use all of them.
Okay, you can't lock me into that. So, yeah. And so I had to do my comps.
Right.
So as I'm doing my comps,
when you say comps, what do you mean exactly? Because
your comps. Okay. So what
you say? Comps.
So in order to graduate, you had to pass your comps. So you had to pass because I was in soci. You had to do theory, research, and your specialization. My specialization was deviance. So you had to answer these questions. So I'm like, okay. So I take the theory. I take the comps, the research I pass, specialization I pass, the theory I don't pass, you know, so this one professor.
And you use deviance in your theory?
No, and my specialization was deviance.
Okay.
So now on the theory part, we had to talk about the theories.
Right.
He had to read it, and he could either say pass or fail. So I had taken that three times. He failed me three times. So I'm like, and then they were trying to tell me, you're not going to get your degree. I'm like, what? Are you crazy? You know what I mean? So I wind up having to write a dissertation, a thesis.
No.
So here was the thing. I had to write a thesis paper.
Man, I remember those.
My thesis paper was 187 pages.
Yeah, man.
And there was a guy who was sitting next to me defending his dissertation, and his was like 78 pages.
Yeah, I remember I did a thesis when I was in, man, my thing was 220 pages, man. My the bibliography, the resource was about 20 pages alone.
Yeah. So again, that, you know, when I was going through that, he was the one that was championing my cause. Mm. He stood up and bucked the system.
And you're still in contact with him?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's so.
Yeah. I mean, he was the one, because without him standing up and championing my cause, they would have tried to do something. You know what I mean? They would have tried to prevent me from getting my master's degree.
Wow.
So, I mean, he really put his name on the line because he had a lot of influence about the school.
Yeah.
He was just like, he knew what was happening and he put it out there.
Do you think they were doing that because they were giving you so much hack about that because of you not being white? Did it?
No, you know what? Now, I have an honest answer with that, yes. Is that when I was up there and I went there for graduate school, there was a situation where some police officers or some security guards did something to a couple black students up at the mall. So then we went, you know, and boycotted the mall. So I was...
You part of the organizing
it? Oh, of course. Right up front, you know what I mean?
And so faculty and teachers knew that you were part of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So some of the things of talking about racism, talking about, you know, those things came up. And of course, I was championing the cause. And I wasn't afraid to say what was really happening.
So this is exactly what we're talking about. But this is the other piece that's also dope.
I understand the gang, though.
And in the midst of white people dealing with practicing white supremacy, it was a white person that ultimately came and helped you through that.
Absolutely.
See, this is where kind of the, what is the word? The contrary nature of this thing that we're dealing with. In the midst of that, it's the follow-up question, the white friends that you do have, or even that professor, have you guys ever talked about racism, white supremacy at all?
Well, with him, because he's a sociologist, of course.
So we talked about that.
We've had those conversations. Yeah. But then the other thing about him, he was adopted, and he was raised in the inner city. Mm-hmm. So there's a commonality. Where he been through some things and seen some things that I've seen.
You know, I want to give an analogy that I use, especially, you touched on it a little bit, but even more so now. When we were on the slave ship, the shittiest job on the slave ship was the white sailor. The white sailor had the worst job on the slave ship. The white sailors actually had to stay among the slaves. Even in the midst of our putridness of defecating and pissing and even dying and decaying, that white sailor had to stay down there. Mm-hmm. And even would have to remove the body itself by itself. Mm-hmm. The white sailor also ate the same food as the slaves. They just had it at a bigger portion, but they ate the same food that the slaves ate. Whenever there was a slave revolt, whenever there was an issue, a problem, whenever there was a fight, that white sailor was held accountable in comparative terms to the white slave captain. There were certain points in times that white sailor would have amassed so much debt from the voyage that they would have to do the next two or three slave ship voyages for free to pay off the debt that it had. Mm-hmm. Man, in all circumstances of all situations, man, it was the shittiest thing to be a white sailor on the slave ship.
No, but
let me finish. So what winds up happening now is we will have white people who will live with us, eat the same food, even experience some of the uncomfortableness of being in that environment. But when that slave ship docked, the condition of that sailor, when he walked off that ship, and his ability to change his circumstances was completely different than the slave that took this voyage with him. Mm-hmm. It is likened to when we have white people who grow up in our neighborhoods, who eat the same food, who live right next to us, who see some of the things that we go through, and their ability to change their conditions without fret, without recourse, without conditions, without setup, institutionalized. Now, of course, they're experiencing the same thing, but their ability to change their circumstances, not three generations in a whole, right then and there. Every single white person, no matter where they're born on this planet, is already born, whether they have no money or not, 83% of everything they'll ever need to be successful in life. And every single person, particularly black folks in America, when they're born, they are born with three generations of debt as soon as they show up. I put in correct perspective when it comes to comparing this, it's the same, because it's not the same. It seems the same. Poor white family is completely different than a poor black family.
So what is the difference between someone mm-hmm. who come from the bottom.
When you say someone, you're saying
a black person who come from the bottom.
Yes.
You could take two people that's from the bottom, they come from the bottom, one makes it out, one doesn't.
Yes.
The difference between the one who makes it out uh-huh. and the one makes it out, who was living for something, his dreams was bigger than his circumstances.
Okay. Compared to another black person?
Oh, absolutely.
I would say this.
Absolutely.
I would say this. Because of the control and that question that I had asked about anything that you had, anything you got, mm-hmm, right, mm-hmm. is actually even a lot deeper because it speaks to the entrenched control and influence of the environment. So I'm going to answer your question by saying, when there is one black kid and another black kid, and one is successful growing up and the other one isn't, I'm letting you know that that is a reflection of the system of it being created. It's known as attrition, right?
I got you.
There are things set up in this society so that it does not implode on itself that allows certain amount of non-white people to be successful. And not only that, to showcase that they're successful, to make the sense of understanding for everybody else that it's really not that deep.
Okay.
That it's really not that serious. Look, we got LeBron. Look, we got Oprah. But in comparative terms, mm-hmm. it is not equal, nor does it reflect the real conditioning, because as soon as we do have an Oprah, or because we do have a LeBron, we have to have 350,000 young black boys that will never
because they don't change. Okay, so let me put it to you this way.
Is the condition open enough for everyone to become LeBron?
So let me, without a doubt.
So we can have 350,000 LeBrons.
If you change your mindset. It's about changing your mindset. Mm. For example, I grew up on a hill. There was a baseball team. We played baseball. It was 12 of us on this baseball team, right?
Hold that thought. Hold 1 second. All right, here we go. Last segment. Final question before solutions. Do you think, the question is, have you ever engaged in sexual activity and or sexual play with a white person in your life?
No.
Okay. Do you think it is appropriate for people who are non-white to engage in sexual activity and or sexual play with white people while racism is in existence?
To me, I mean, that's an individual choice.
True.
I think that, you know, when it comes down to who you find attractive, mm-hmm. who you're around, once you break down the barriers, it just comes down to who you can connect with.
Okay.
So you could take a white person, put them in a black community, they're going to be able to connect more with black people than white people. So if you take a black person, put them in a white neighborhood, they're going to think that they can, you know, connect more with a white person. And then those individuals get to see individuals for who they are uh-huh. and get beyond a little bit of the color.
Okay. So it's not appropriate. So it is appropriate for it to happen.
To me, to each his own. It has
nothing to do with appropriateness.
It has nothing to do with appropriateness, and it has nothing to do with where we're trying to go.
Okay, all right.
So where we're trying to go as a collective, that has nothing to do with it.
Okay. Is racism in existence?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Are people who are not white, are they subject to people who are white because racism is in existence?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is it appropriate for a teacher to have sex with a student in school?
Are you talking about like high school, middle school, college?
I'm an associate college professor. I'm letting you know now, if I have sex with any of my students in this building, it is completely inappropriate, even though we're both consenting adults.
Okay.
So it's not appropriate?
I think it's not appropriate as long as that student is in the school and is taking classes here. Right. But once that student graduates, then if that's the rules of the game, then you have to play the rules of the game.
Is it appropriate for a prison guard to have sex with a prisoner while they are in jail?
Absolutely not. That's against, you know what I mean? Again, once that prisoner gets out of jail, then the circumstances change.
Right. is it appropriate for an employer to have sex with an employee at the job?
Like the boss is having sex with somebody at the job.
Not someone at having sex with them while they're at in the building at the in the office.
Oh, that's inappropriate.
Okay. It's inappropriate because of the power dynamics between one individual and the other. And because of the context when this sexual activity happens, because of the improper, you know, because of the difference of the power dynamic, it makes it completely improper, right? It makes it completely inappropriate.
I can see where you are.
Yeah. So now the question is, if racism is in existence and it creates a condition or a context to where that if sexual interaction happens between someone who is not white and to somebody who is white, that you agree that they are subject to because of the power dynamic, how is that not inappropriate as well? When all these other relationships where those power dynamics were being expressed sexually in the context of the environment that they were having sex in, is equally inappropriate.
Because I think out of all the examples you gave me, there's the thing that exists in all of them is choice. But in all the other ones except for the color is that the other dynamics can change. That prisoner can get out of jail. Mm. That employee can go get another job somewhere else. Mm. You know what I mean? So
then now I'm asking you, is there anywhere that you can go on this planet to have a sexual interaction and or sexual play with a white person where there's no racism in existence?
I mean, there's communities in Allegheny County where
there's no racism.
Where I wouldn't say that, I don't know because I don't live in those communities. But I think racism exists regardless of where you go. But where it's more accepted that there are interracial relationships, marriages, children. You know what I mean? It's
I understand
it's in those communities. So for me, I think the difference is depending on mm-hmm. your circumstances. If I'm working with somebody, mm-hmm. then no, I can, you know, I mean, one of us can go get another job somewhere else.
True.
You can stay here. You love this job. I'll go work somewhere else. Now what we do is between us.
So the ultimate thing is does the existence of it, of racism, is that what makes it inappropriate?
No. Mm-mm. For me, and if you listen since we've been talking, I don't allow racism to control me. I just don't. I don't allow it to control my thoughts.
Even though it may be present.
It's present, but I'm not going to allow it. Now, it's going to control how I'm going to move because I know that it's there. You know what I mean? But it's not going to control me and what I'm trying to do. So I'm not going to allow that to be a distraction. Right. I set goals for myself. I see the goal and I'm attacking the goal. When I attack a goal, I'm putting those blinders on and I'm going to go get the goal. And I'm not going to stop until I complete the task. So if I focus, if I allow myself to focus on these distractions, it's going to take me away from the goal. Hmm. I don't have time for that. Life is too short. So if I'm focused on racism or what this person going to say, I don't have time for that. If that's what you want to do, so be it. I'll meet you wherever you're trying to go. If you're trying to make it to the top, you want to do it dating a white woman. All right, fine. I'll meet you at the top. I don't care. That's your choice. Mm-hmm. That's your choice. Now, how I'm gonna go about my business is how I'm gonna go about my business, and I'm gonna stick to my business.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that, and because of you never really engaging in that type of activity, I can understand. I can understand that. There have been people where I've talked to them, and because they participated and have done some sexual activity in their structural play, and mind you, I didn't say making children or getting married. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about sex itself. Mm-hmm. Because sex is one of the most powerful interactions we have as human beings. And so for me, I'm trying to see, does sex interfere with the system of white supremacy? Is it a tool used? If it's used properly, is it creating confusion? And I'm looking, is the condition of the dynamics making it inappropriate? It does. So my question is it happening? Because what is ultimately going on is there is a, how should I say, an understanding of dealing with this system to where that it is created in a benign neglect attitude. Do you know what I understand when I say benign neglect? Mm-hmm. Meaning like you neglect it because it's not serious, because it's not in the way, as you're saying. And if you focus on what you need to focus, you really don't need to pay it any attention. And I'm saying that it's presented, it's actually taught to be seen like that. Racism, implicitly and explicitly, is taught now to not pay attention to it, because then you allow it can stay and fester where it's at. That's why, because what winds up happening is, if we do focus on it, if we do put it in the correct context, right? If I'm focusing on a goal, and I'm focused on what I need to focus on, and I understand that racism is in existence, well then guess what? Before I even charge at the goal, why am I charging at that goal?
Because it's a choice. That's something that I want.
But what I'm trying to say is, if the context of what we're in, the environment or what we're in, creates our choices, we are under your
No, no, you create your choices. You create your
choices. Can you choose something that is not presented in front of you?
Meaning what?
Perfect example. Either you're going to do this, go to this school, play this sport, or do your grades like this, or you're gonna go out to trade, or try to do this business.
All those are choices, though.
But all those choices not created for you.
No, you create those choices for you.
Oh, now how not created? Are they not there? Are they not presented?
There's a whole bunch of stuff that's presented to you. It's up to you to go after if that's what you choose to do. It is your choice to do it. I'm not forced to go out and work in a cotton field. I'm not forced to go do that.
No.
Now, if I choose, mm-hmm. because maybe that's something that I like to do,
uh-huh.
then if I choose to go pick cotton, then I'll go pick cotton.
But the other point is, wherever you do choose to go, the constant is the same. Whether you chose to go work in the cotton field or whether you chose to be an NFL star.
That's my choice.
No. What I'm saying is the constants are the same. And what are the constants? That white people or a white person will be owning and controlling that which you go to edify and develop for them. So if I decide,
but if that's my choice, now that's not the end goal. Like say I might say I'm gonna go work for this person, then I'm gonna save this amount of money mm-hmm. so that I can go do this and I can create this for myself.
Now
that's a choice.
Yes, but when you do that, are you not using a white bank?
What do you mean?
So if you go and you do what you need to do,
yes.
Now I'm gonna do my own thing. The money that you're going to use, you're going to be using a white bank, correct?
No, you don't have to, because there's black banks that are in existence.
But that credit union and that black bank, especially specifically even the Hill District, is holding to a giant bank that's owned by white people.
Okay, so even if it's holding to it has nothing to do with, at the end of the day, what I choose to do with the money that I make, uh-huh. regardless if it's held in a white bank or a black uh-huh. bank. It doesn't matter. What matters is what I choose to do with that money.
Mm.
If I want to invest that money into property inside the Hill District, if I want to invest it in children in the Hill District,
yeah.
if I want to create scholarships opportunities yeah. for kids in the Hill District, if I want to create it for black people as a whole, that's my choice.
Is there anything that you can do as you relate to your choice that would not feed the system of white supremacy?
That's almost like a double-edged sword, the way you're presenting, because then you're going to go back to pulling back the layers. So, for example, if I can create a scholarship for a kid who's going to a HBCU. So what you're going to say, if you peel back the thing, that school is owned by or...
It is.
Okay, but again, it's still... At the end of the day, it's still benefiting someone that looks like me.
It benefiting someone that you, or is it at the cost of someone that looks like
me? No, it's benefiting someone that looks like me. Because if I can give a scholarship to a kid who would not normally, who wouldn't have access to a school without the scholarship,
right.
then I'm benefiting that individual.
Right. And also, the white-owned corporation and company is also benefiting as well.
But that's part of the society. Somebody's going to be making money off of it.
Yeah, but... No, we're not going to say somebody. It's very specific who's making money.
No, because there are certain things that there are black folks that are doing that they're benefiting from it.
At the expense. in a capitalist society, it's always going to be because someone's giving money. It's always going to be at the expense of someone else. It's capitalism. That's what it is. That's the system. Now, you can tag it as being racist. You can tag it as being white. I'd rather just tag it as it's a capitalist society. In the capitalist society, you're going to haves and have-nots. But in also in a capitalist society, you it's the only system that you can come up with an idea and you can benefit from the idea as much as you want or as less as you want, depending on how bad you do it. Just the same way with your podcast. At the end of the day, if you meet a certain amount of numbers, someone's going to want to buy into what you're doing.
I'm going to let you know right now, the majority of the numbers I'm shooting for are white people, and I'm looking for a white person and or white people to buy into it and to buy into it astronomically.
And again, I'm okay with that because at the end of the day, it's your choice.
There is.
It's your choice.
I feel you. There's no other thing I could choose to pick from for it to not touch a white person's hand. Then this is where the self-sufficiency and the self-reliance comes in. I want to be the only one and for my only people be the only ones to benefit in some form or fashion, right? In a long straight line. But because like you said, well, that's the system. And that's what the conversation I've been saying. And that system is white. Now, I think that because there are certain things that are happening that we, like, yeah, man, don't stick on that race thing. And I feel that, and I understand that, and I'm with that. But then when you start really looking at certain things, right, and then everybody, oh, well, you know, yeah, well, there's going to be, we're not going to stick on this race thing. There's somehow, some way, when we start peeling back situations and issues to solve problems, we start really looking at where the problem's coming. I'm not saying that the root cause is racism, but for some reason you can't deal with any problem unless you go through dealing with the race problem.
See, but you're going to go look at the race problem. I'm going to look at the individual collective as a whole. I'd rather look at the collective. I'm going to look at the collective and say,
what collective folks, is above the race problem?
No, the black folks internally.
Okay.
We spent $1.1 trillion and the black dollar stays in the black community for less than 6 hours.
Yes.
That is problematic. That's not a white man's fault.
No, but that's a white man's cause. The white man has created the condition to where $1.1 trillion that we're doing does not stay in our community for in 6 hours.
That's a choice that you take your money and you make a choice to take your money outside of your community.
I'm going
to
be 100% honest.
Outside of your community.
This may be me. I'm going to be 100% honest. There are very few things, I would say about 2% of the choices that we make as non-white people that are of our own. 98%, me included, 98% of the things that are in my head, I can speak for myself and reflective of speaking to everyone else. 98% of the things and thoughts and ideas in my head are not originally mine. And I would
see that.
And I know for me, and I'm not saying, I'm not trying to compare myself. I like to liken myself to kind of more of an intellectual prowess among white and non-white people. And I've come to the realization that 98% of the things that are in my head and ideas and thoughts and feelings and choices that I'm making are not of my own. They're not originally of mine. And also, the majority of those 98% has come from the mind of a white person and or white people.
I mean, you could say that. I mean, and for me, I wouldn't even, as we start to think about things like that in that perspective, okay, but those are the things that I learned a lot of things, but would I choose to let stick? That's my choice. And what I choose to act on is my choice. At the end of the day, I work hard so I can create more choices for myself. Choices create opportunities. Opportunities create wealth.
And we've already saw that there's pretty much no opportunity that you may be able to attain that does not include a white person and or white people.
Okay, when you live in a country and you live in a society where
I say in the world. If you live in a world where white supremacy exists, that is what's going to happen.
So you're saying white supremacy, I'm saying white people. Well, white people exist because, again, they're the majority.
You know what the thing is?
There's a difference. Majority. In this society, they're the majority.
Yes.
In American society, they're the majority.
Yes.
On a global,
they're not.
They're not.
But they still own and control.
Yeah, because they colonized things. They went in, they took over, and they put certain things infrastructure-wise.
Systems
where you'll continue to be needy on them particularly, and they're going to make money based upon it.
I get that, but not until people start understanding the game, then you can change the game.
I agree with that.
If you understand the game, you can change the game.
Closing.
Okay.
Solutions. What is a solution now? And I want you to touch base upon solutions in developing understanding and or applying or not being used in the understanding of group dynamics.
Well, again, I think when we start talking about solutions, I started with that at the beginning.
Yes.
It's participating, you know, economically,
right,
politically, and entrepreneurship. That's the key. That is the key. That's the foundation.
True.
Now, the other piece, and you know, especially when you're dealing with people, is just understanding dynamics and understanding the control dynamics and understanding leadership and understand who's the leader. A lot of times we speak to the wrong people. And when you speak to the wrong people, you're not going to be able to move people in a particular direction unless you speak to the right people. So that's understanding who's the person that's in control. A lot of times we listen to the person who speaks the loudest, and they're not necessarily the person that's in control. It could be the person that's sitting in the corner that very rarely says too much. But when he does say something, everybody pays attention, everybody moves. There's natural characteristics to leaders that people don't know how to identify. Once you understand who the leader is, then you can start to make change. I don't care what environment that you're in. If you go to a family reunion, it may be, you know, the matriarch may be that grandmother. You can walk in and speak to everybody and don't speak to her, and it's everything's downhill from there. You in trouble. Mm. You in trouble. But if you go in, pay your respects to her first before I go speak to everybody else, let me go speak. Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to come in. I really appreciate you. Love you so much. Da, 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 da. Now, you in the right spot. But if you don't want to pay respect to those individuals, boom. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have the title. You just have to be keen and looking at it and having a keen sense of understanding and where's the leadership and where's the power at. Everything creates power.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? So a lot of times you're trying to create change, but you don't understand the power.
Wow. Whew. Good brother. Single, obsolete, and dangerous. The dangerous part is not the people. The dangerous part is the conversation.
That's right. We're afraid to have the right conversations. That's the problem with us.
Thank you so much, good brother.
Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate, love you, man.